a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources. Where KSL offers Utah deeper insights on the news. Host Boyd Matheson divides rage from reason
and elevates the conversation on issues crucial to our community.
On KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Well, it's almost become a mantra for both political parties in American politics in recent years. Don't trust the polls. While it's tempting to write off polling, and granted it has been wrong on a number of occasions over the past few election cycles, we want to look a little deeper today in terms of what are things pollsters could be doing or should be doing to really get to the heart of these issues and to, one, help the Americans be honest about what they're sharing with pollsters and then how that data all comes together. Like I say, it's both sides of the aisle. This fascinating piece popped up for me the other day, and two campaign pollers wrote a piece about charting a future for the polling industry. So one Democratic pollster, one Republican pollster on what's wrong with contemporary public opinion polling and how it can be fixed. Joining us is Trevor Smith. He's a PhD and is the chief research officer of WPA Intelligence, a Republican polling firm. Trevor, thanks for joining us.
Boyd, thank you so much for having me. I'm a little under the weather, so sorry if my voice cracked a little bit.
All right. We appreciate you playing injured today on a Friday. We know it's easier to mail it in, so we appreciate you stepping up for us. Well, as you sat down with your counterpart from across the aisle, what are some of the broad things that just jumped out at you immediately in terms of why are we where we are with polling, and then how do we start to make some tweaks?
Yeah, so I think there's a big difference between what everybody sees and what campaigns see. A big difference between what Bradley and I do is we do a lot of campaign polling, and if we don't get our stuff right, then our reputation is really killed, and it really makes it hard for us to keep getting work. The media pollsters, I think, you know, they have an advantage because they put out stuff that's wrong, and then they try to fix it, and then they try to fix it again, and it's still wrong. So I think that's a big difference between what everybody sees publicly and then what campaign pollsters do. But what I think is the biggest problem in polling, public polling, and, you know, this is something that in media polling, and this is something that we run into, is sampling frame stuff. So I was really happy that we put this as the first problem in the article with sample framing. And I think the Literary Digest poll is a really good example. Back then, you know, they talked to 10 million people, or they polled 10 million people. They got 2.7 million responses, and they were just completely wrong. The results were completely backwards. And I think we're kind of seeing something similar now. The reason that they got it wrong is because they were polling people that were in clubs or had phones. And back in 1936, how many people were in clubs and had phones? So now we're kind of running into the same problem where there's a lot of different ways to contact people. And if the framing is off, then you're going to end up with, you're going to end up with undersampled voters. So a lot of people talked about the undersampled Trump voter in 2016 and a little bit in 2020. And they claim that waiting to education was the fix. And, you know, you do need to control your education stratifications prior to going to the field and after you get out. But making sure that you're hitting people where they are and making sure that you're not having a frame that only includes one type of person. Like, there was a poll that just came out yesterday, and I really have a lot of respect for the guy who runs the poll, so I'm not going to name names, but he did an all online panel of 1,000 adults, and he screened down to likely voters, and they had Biden up pretty big against Trump and even DeSantis, and that's fine. You know, we can put stuff out there like that, but an all online panel of adults screening down, That's a pretty big framing issue, because what you're excluding there, you're excluding, you're not doing it from a from a panel of registered voters, which creates a problem. And then you're screening from adults down to likely voters or whatever they did. So I think that just creates a big problem. And then you're excluding a big portion of the electorate that you can't reach online. And there's still a lot of people that you can't reach online. So and then the media runs with these numbers and they're like, he's a, you know, respected pollster, but then they're just completely wrong. And there's nobody in the country right now that would tell you that things are going well for Democrats.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. And I love the fact that you've started with this idea of just the framing of it matters. Cause if you get the framing wrong, there's no way you're possibly going to get to the right answers in the end. And I encourage everyone to really check out the 1936 Literary Digest poll as Trevor just described it. It's so interesting. I mean, 10 million down to 2.7 million. And again, this was a group that had it all figured out. They predicted that Kansas Governor Alf Landon was going to win over sitting President Roosevelt. But of course,
he's going to win by like 25 points, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, the flip of that is so significant. But a lot of those same challenges, those framing challenges exist today. Again, going from landlines and who's online versus who's on a cell phone and how do you get to those? And then how do you go beyond adults to registered voters to likely voters? Those are all interesting framing components. Another thing that you talk about, Trevor, in your piece is just the polling American adults versus just the likely voters. How do we adjust there?
Yeah, so it was kind of what we talked about before, but you screen down from adults to registered voters to likely voters, and that's all fine and good, and it's how we've been doing it for a long time. But the problem is you create human error in there. You don't know your behavior tomorrow. I don't know my behavior tomorrow. Most people don't know if they're registered to vote. A lot of people don't know if they're registered to vote. And they certainly don't know if they're going to vote 6-7 months from now. So doing that creates just a lot of human error. And it's not like intentional. It just creates a lot of human error because we don't know our behavior tomorrow, let alone 6 months from now.
Yeah, interesting. I want to jump into one of the other points that you made that I think is one that seems to be the hardest for everyone to sort out. And that is this idea of socially desirable answers. Tell us what that means and why that's such a problem in your polling.
I figured you were going to go there. so this is one of Bradley's things. I think there is something to it. So in the 1990s, oh gosh, I can't remember the name of it. There's three great studies done, just phenomenal studies to understand African Americans. And they're just really, really good studies. And one thing that they learned is that if a white person was calling them, then they weren't going to get truthful responses. So it's kind of the same thing with the social desirable answers. I'm a big believer that the frame is more important. And I do think that there's issues, like I said, with those great studies from the 90s. But I do think there's issues with social desirable answers, but I think that the framing is far more important. But I do think that there's a component there that needs to be figured out.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. We're going to have you back as you continue to roll that out in terms of what happens, what comes next, how we adjust that so we have confidence in that. I love the fact that you've really pointed out today the difference between just some of that media polling versus an actual campaign polling, where your reputation is on the line, your business is on the line. And how those tend to be a little better, a little more accurate than some of those big sweeping generalities, maybe poorly framed pieces that we see out of a lot of the media outlets.
Yeah, yeah. And if you don't mind, one of the problems is that people always go after campaign pollsters when we release stuff. So like they're trying to show good numbers. Well, yeah, we're only going to show the good numbers when it's beneficial to our clients.
right. Absolutely. Oh, good stuff. Well, hey, Trevor, we appreciate you playing hurt today and joining us on the air. Trevor Smith, he's a PhD and is the chief research officer of WPA Intelligence, great polling firm. Love the fact that you've tag teamed with one of your Democratic pollster friends to really look at this issue. I think it's an important one for us. It clearly impacts our elections. It impacts how we view a lot of the critical issues of the day. Trevor, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
All right, we'll step aside for one last commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to round it out. We're about a week away from the Olympics in Beijing. Should we engage? Should we disengage? How do we enjoy it? How do we support our Olympic athletes? And what are the lessons we all ought to be thinking about rolling into the Olympics? Stay with us. More to come on Inside Sources here on KSL News Radio.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.